This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, ask language, how do you like them apples? And language replies, those apples. You want to know how I like those apples? And I say, not anymore, I don't. Today, we return to an autumnal classic allusionist, the one where we learned all about how apples get named. It's a really fun time. I am happy to hear it again. But stick around to the end, because there is an extra new adventure. Last weekend, I went to an apple festival. And you're all coming with me. Just two points of information before we begin. Point one, Patreon now offers a free tier, so if you want to keep track of what's happening in the Allusiverse, like new episodes arriving and such like, then you can sign up there at patreon.com/allusionist to receive occasional updates. Then if you want to level up to paid membership, you also get loads of extra stuff. Live streams with me and my dictionaries. Watch-alongs. At the moment, we're watching the current season of Great British Bake Off. You get the company of your fellow Allusionauts in the Allusiverse Discord community, which is a genuinely pleasant corner of the internet. And you get behind-the-scenes missives about each episode. Last time, patrons received some real deep cuts about audio production. That stuff is for the paying patrons, but sign up for free and you get an email once or twice a month. No more inbox clutter than that, I promise. Patreon.com/allusionist. Point of information two is for you if you listen to the show using Apple Podcasts. Apparently, a new update will unsubscribe you if you don't listen to the show promptly enough, and I don't want to pressure you or add more deadlines to your life, so may I suggest you set the show to download, because I gather this means you do not get automatically unsubscribed, or at least not as soon. I got a message from someone the other day who thought the show had finished 3 years ago. Didn't. I've been here this whole time. And now, The Appallusionist, which was a collaboration with the Sporkful podcast. Their episode was about how new kinds of apples are made. Mine was about how apples are named. And why? Because back then, in the autumn of 2019, a new apple was about to be launched. It's been in development since 1997. It's expected to be a huge moneymaker of an apple, being reliable for growers and staying good for a really long time. Millions of trees have already been planted, millions of apples pre-ordered. It's the biggest product launch in Apple history. It has its own trademark slogans, the apple of big dreams, TM, and amazing flavour plus infinite possibilities, TM. It's the apple formerly known as the WA38, the Cosmic Crisp. What's the big fuss about the Cosmic Crisp? Why is everyone so hyped about this particular apple? In your opinion?
Well, it's probably a little bit of a circular thing, like because so much effort and expense has been put into making it, that creates the hype, the stakes. The stakes of the thing create the hype. If it was just like a soft launch, like, hey, we're going to plant a few trees, we're going to see how it goes, and then maybe in 20 years we'll have the Honey Crisp, that's not as exciting.
You've really got to be incredibly patient, haven't you, when you're trying to come up with a new apple that's great? Because you might not find out that it's failed for so many years. It is not an easy process.
You're right.
You've got to be a diligent and patient human who loves the company of trees.
The guy who first came up with the cross that became Cosmic Crisp retired before the process ended. That's how long it took.
Didn't get to see it come to fruition.
Oh! Very nicely done.
Don't reward me for bad behavior.
On the Sporkful episode, Dan and I find out about what goes into developing a new kind of apple. And right here, on The Allusionist, it's all about apple names.
Coming up with a Cosmic Crisp name was a little agonising initially.
This is Professor Kate Evans, who's been leading the Cosmic Crisp breeding programme at Washington State University since the apple's father, Bruce Barrett, retired in 2008.
Various people have said it's actually worse than naming your child because people criticise you if they don't like the name. And usually usually people I don't say, hey, that's a terrible name you named your child. Why did you do that? You know,
don't they?
But with an apple, yeah, you get a lot of that.
How do you name the apple that's getting the biggest launch of our lifetimes?
Catherine Grandy, I am Chief Marketing Officer for Proprietary Variety Management. And we have been contracted by Washington State University to commercialize the WA38, which is now called Cosmic Crisp.
It's a catchier name.
As a marketing group, we look at the category. You know, what is the heritage of the apple? What's the parentage? You know, how was it bred? Where was it developed and researched? What is the location that it's being grown? And we kind of evaluate the category. And then we look at the physical characteristics of the apple. And, you know, is it red? Is it green? Is it two colors, bicolor? Or what does it look like?
The Cosmic Crisp is very round, with pale, firm flesh and shiny, dark red skin covered in little light dots, the lenticels, the apple's pores. It is a good-looking apple. You'd cast it in a production of Snow White.
And then we taste it. And what's the flavor profile? Is it sweet? Is it crunchy? Is it juicy? And, you know, we collectively develop a profile for that product. And then we do sensory testing with consumers.
The university worked with focus groups doing taste and sensory testing.
Cosmic Crisp is the first apple named by consumers, which I find interesting.
And it was really just, you know, getting the apple in there, brainstorming with different groups to come up with words that they thought were descriptive of that fruit that they were looking at and tasting.
And we do try to guide them away from some of the more interesting names.
Such as?
Well, people love to name fresh fruit after candy. And we've had candy cane, candy apple, candy crunch, Jolly Rancher, taking a fresh piece of fruit that's very nutritious and calling it candy or sugar just didn't feel right.
But can I ask, Catherine, I would think that people know that fruit is generally healthy. And so anything that tastes like candy but is still fruit would be a good thing. Like, why is Candy Crunch or Candy Apple not a good name for an apple?
Well, my personal opinion is because we're promoting nutrition and health, but in general, they don't resonate with consumers. Consumers don't really like the sugar or candy implication either. So having had that feedback, describing it as candy wasn't necessarily the right direction for us to go.
Got it.
Others wanted to name it after the state where it's grown in Washington, but being a global brand, it didn't necessarily resonate outside of the state.
Are there any other terms or words that you prefer to steer clear from?
Well, we had a list that we received, and collectively, I think there was about 250 names on it from growers and consumers. And, you know, we did get things that describe the color of the apple, like we received the name, you know, Red Darling and Cardinal Crisp and Red Beauty. And so, I mean, I think the color description's always nice, but there are so many apples today with crimson or red or that description that it wasn't unique. And the combination of Red Crisp or something like that's very difficult in today's world to trademark.
What are the criteria for a trademark?
It has to be unique, and it can't be similar to another food product. An example would be Red Beauty. That was on our list.
That was on your list for Cosmic Crisp?
For Cosmic Crisp, yeah, Red Beauty. And there are other trademarks in other areas of the world that use similar name combinations. And Cosmic Crisp needed to be unique, not only to be trademarked in the U.S., but it's a global brand and needed to have a meaningful name that went internationally as well and that meant all the right things in other languages and other cultures. So, you know, it gets complicated trying to name something that will resonate with people in all cultures across the globe.
You've got to look at what does that name mean? What would that name mean in different countries with different languages? It is a challenge coming up with a decent name that works wherever you are.
It took around a year to settle on the name Cosmic Crisp.
And the word cosmic came up quite early on because somebody associated the appearance of the fruit with the cosmos. It can be a sort of relatively reddy, purpley kind of background with almost looks like little white stars over it. Those are the lenticels on the skin. All apples have them, and they're in some cases are a little more prominent than others in terms of appearance. And so this, it reminds me of the cosmos.
I think freckles is a better analogy.
Reminding me a bit of a dappled horse.
Yes.
Nobody asked us, though.
So the word cosmic came in at that point. And crisp is a very, very obvious word to go with the apple.
It is a crisp apple. Also, crisp nods to one of the cosmic crisp's parents, the honey crisp. Its other parent, the Enterprise. Bad luck, Enterprise.
And initially, growers and even some people from WSU didn't really like the name Cosmic Crisp.
Oh, why not?
Oh, they said it's like the Jetsons, you know, too futuristic.
And is that bad?
I love the name. And being futuristic and like the Jetsons, I think is pretty cool. But the one thing I've learned being in marketing is everybody is an art director. And somebody wanted to name Cosmic Crisp Sparkle. And to me, that makes me think of dish soap. And it is a trademark name for paper towels.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot to naming it properly.
Right.
There's an apple called strawberry. How is that allowed? That's just confusing.
Well, maybe it looks like a strawberry.
Maybe it has hints of strawberry in its flavor.
Not good enough. I like that there's one called Jonathan as well. That's the normcore apple.
But is there one, Catherine, that you haven't had any involvement in that you're just like, oh man, that's a great name?
You know, I like the name Snapdragon, and that's a New York apple. And the tagline's great, a monster crunch. I think that's pretty descriptive. They have a nice logo.
Helen, do you have a favorite?
Not yet. I feel like the best could be yet to come. And also, I find it difficult to separate the quality of the name from the apple. So, for instance, I enjoy a jazz apple, therefore I like the jazz apple name. But do I?
Right.
And why was it named jazz? I don't know.
It's a fun word, but then I don't feel like the apple is what jazz music would taste like.
I agree. I feel like it's a name that like sounds good on the surface, but upon further reflection makes no sense.
I think it's more like a jaunty brass band number or something.
Yes.
I have a question. Red Delicious. How dare it?
Oh, boy. Are you not thinking it's so delicious anymore?
Come on. Who is thinking it is?
Helen and I are going to team up on a class action lawsuit for false advertising.
It is red. I'll allow that.
We're moving it to the potato category because that's kind of what it tastes like these days, you know?
I think some people will be surprised that when they are mentioning an apple by name, they're actually mentioning a trademarked word. They might think, oh, that's just what it's called. Like a carrot is called a carrot.
Yeah. I notice with Cosmic Crisp, people are already trying to shorten it to Cosmics. And because of our trademark protection, you know, we of course want them to say Cosmic Crisp, but it's kind of like Cola and Coke or Xerox and Copy. We have to be very protective and careful to use the trademarked name so that we don't lose it.
Is there a way that we should be pronouncing the R in a circle at the end of Cosmic Crisp?
Just use it.
I'll mime it with my hands. Do you know of any apples that were called like Dreary Fluffball and then they renamed them Phantasma Mouthgasm so that they would sell better?
Oh, gosh.
Did you say Phantasma Mouthgasm, Helen?
You can have that.
It's not completely beyond the realms of possibility. Some apples do have very grandstanding names.
Laxton's Superb, Laxton's Epicure, Laxton's Exquisite, Laxton's Peerless, Laxton's Triumph. You know, you get the idea. Apples grown by a 19th century chap called Laxton. He is not shy on advertising, was Laxton.
This is Joanna Crosby, who studies the social and economic history of apples.
I asked her about how apples used to be named before focus groups and taste testing and marketing departments were part of the process.
And a new variety of an apple comes up. A lot of the time it's named after what it looks like.
Crimson Delight, Pink Pearl, Brown Snout, Knobby Russet.
So, for instance, there's an apple that probably dates back to the Roman times. You can still eat it today, which is quite an amazing piece of time travel, I think. And it's called the Court Pondu Plat, which means short, hanging and round, which it is. Once you've seen it, you can't forget it. It looks sort of like a flat peach, like a donut peach in shape. It is really flat and it's really round. There's also apples like the Red Streak. There's also Sunset and Suntan. Now, they have the most beautiful coloured skins. There's Cat's Head, which is indeed exactly the shape of a cat's head. You could put some ears on it, make a little Halloween lantern out of a cat's head apple. Actually, the tree related to an apple, the medlar, it's like an early cousin of a sweet apple tree. It has a smaller fruit on it, but its country name is, I'm afraid to say, cat's arse. Because that's also what the fruit looks like.
It does. Luckily, or unluckily, there are lots of apple names that are not referring to the fruit's appearance.
The Orleans Renette. Renette is Little Queen. And they were all named sort of in the 18th century, in the periods when we weren't at war with the French. And all the Renette apples were when France and everything French were incredibly popular. There's one called Mère de Ménage, which sort of means housewife, but is a much more beautiful name for an apple than housewife.
Envy, Flamenco, Jonagold, a portmanteau of Golden Delicious and the Jonathan apple.
There's one called Clear Heart, Early Transparent, Colonel Vaughan, Cornish Pine, Cottenham Seedling, Chiller's Delight.
Splendour, Peasgood's Nonsuch, Foxwhelp, Slack McGirdle, Northern Spy, Green Cheese.
There's Pitt Marston's pineapple because it tastes of pineapple.
An apple's name might contain information about its origins. For instance, a pippin is an apple grown from seed. Or its name might contain the apple's place of origin. Roxbury Russet, Carolina Red June, Beauty of Bath, Westfield Seek No Further.
There's one called a Kentish Fill Basket. And they are well named because one apple would indeed fill a basket. They are huge. If Isaac Newton had sat under a Kentish fill basket apple, he would have been knocked out cold and would never have thought about gravity again, probably.
And a lot of apples have been named after people. Perhaps the person who first grew them, or the person who popularised them.
And the Bramley apple, named after the gentleman who first exhibited it to the Royal Horticultural Society. So he's saying here, this is my apple. But really, the Bramley apple should be called the Mary Ann. Because the young lady who grew the pip from which the Bramley apple and then all Bramley apples have come was called Mary Ann Brailsford. So perhaps we should claim it back for her.
Was Granny Smith a real person?
Granny Smith is named after the lady who grew it from a pip. She was properly called Mrs. Anne Smith, and it comes from New South Wales. Granny Smith herself came from Sussex and emigrated to Australia. And she found a seedling tree growing in a creek. And so it is her apple.
She didn't name the apple after herself. Only a couple of years after discovering and propagating her apple, she died. And a little while later, other growers named it in tribute to her. Other apple tribute names are less sweet and were more compulsory. Say if you worked for some aristocrats and cultivated an apple on land they own.
It is sensible, you know, if you want to keep your job as an estate gardener, if you name your apple after the lord or the lady who you're working for. So we have Lord Derby, which is another large cooking apple. There's also one called Lady Henniker. Now, history does not record how delighted she was to be named after this apple, or this apple named after her, because it is quite an ugly, lumpy, misshapen, big green apple. She may not have been delighted.
Do you think it was an insult if the orchard keeper hated her?
Well, I don't think so, no, but it's not the daintiest of apples, so I do wonder why she came to mind.
The problem with this system, well, apart from issues of meritocracy versus aristocracy or using the apple name as an insult, was that you might have had a situation where the same apple is growing in different places under two different names, or more than two.
an apple variety, if you look up a variety, it can have something like 20 different names, but it's the same apple. So now, in 21st century, we are DNA profiling apples. And I think we will actually find that the number of varieties will reduce because we will have worked out that these apples are one and the same thing.
I've also spent a fair amount of time going through some of that material and testing it, kind of like DNA fingerprinting it, to determine whether or not things are actually the same but with different names. When you start to look at the history of how some of those old varieties have moved into different places, you know, sometimes they came into a particular region and were given a local name, then got absorbed into the national collection at some point with that name. And then you find, oh, actually, there are two or three different, we call them accessions, different entries into the collection that are all different names, but in fact, they're all the same thing.
The Victorians decided something had to be done about this, and with DNA testing not yet an option, in October 1883, the National Apple Congress was held in London. Growers from all over the UK sent in their apples to be catalogued and categorised by a committee of 50 fruiterers. They received 10,150 apple submissions altogether.
And they put them all out in bowls, and first of all they looked at them and tried to see if any were the same variety.
The apple growers also submitted information about such things as what conditions the apples grew in, soil and subsoil, sheltered or exposed places, or what the trees are like, and they had to list what kinds of recipes the apples lent themselves to.
And the public came in to look at this fruit. They'd never seen anything like it, and they actually had to extend the opening hours of the Apple Congress to allow everybody to come in and see it.
And while members of the public were having fun being dazzled by all these apples, the committee had to catalogue all the fruit, record each apple's colour, size, shape, texture, time of the season it ripens, whether it's to be used for dessert, cooking or cider. They found that there were 1,545 kinds of apples at the Congress, exhibited under 2,020 different names or variations on similar names. Some apples had several different names. For instance, the Scorpion apple also appeared as D'Eclat, Harvey's Wiltshire Defiant, and Russian Transparent. Very different names, all very strong names. So how do you choose the best one that the apple's going to be known as henceforth?
I was wondering how you, Dan Pashman, would settle it to choose the apple name that would be the name that the apple got to keep. Throw apples at each other?
Am I like the king in this situation and I just get to...
Sure.
Do I decide by edict or do I need to like... Do we need to... Is this a group effort?
Well, I mean, it's your apple fantasy, so... But sure, you can be King Apple for the day.
I'm the Apple King. I mean, I guess
Congrats.
I would want to like form a focus group of one. Mm-hmm. And I would want to eat the apple and do some sort of like free association exercises to figure out what the apple reminded me of, how it made me feel. And then I would pick which name seemed closest to that.
And would you think, okay, this apple tastes better when it's known as the Royal Crisp versus when it's just Jonathan's apple?
Right. I'm sure that makes a difference. I'm sure that the names make a difference in how you perceive the taste. So you'd have to then do a different kind of test. I wouldn't just want to issue it by edict now that I think about it, Helen. I would want to form... I would bring all my subjects together and I would, you know, divide them up and do a scientific study to see how the name affects the taste perceptions. So you'd have to run studies in both directions. How does the taste dictate the name? And then how do different names dictate the flavor perception?
And or at the same time, you could decide to destroy hierarchies and create a republic through the medium of apple taste testing.
So you're saying, like, you want me to turn it into a democracy. You're asking me to, of my own volition, relinquish all my power.
Yep. Yeah, it's for the greater good. Through apples. Now that you have learned how much time and work goes into an apple, when you're eating one now, are you more or less appreciative of it? Are you thinking, gosh, this is just the result of years, if not centuries, of cultivation? Or are you thinking, wasn't worth it, it's just an apple?
I think it was worth it. I mean, I didn't have to do anything. You know, like, you know, like, it's not, it's, you know, look, I think that the folks who dedicated their lives to this are super passionate about it, so they're happy. And we get to eat the apple, so we're happy. Everyone wins.
That was The Sporklusionist. Now brace yourself, because we are about to go to Applefest 2023. This episode of The Allusionist is brought to you by Wildgrain, the subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Delivered to you if you are in the contiguous United States. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. I love this minimal planning ahead. A lot quicker and easier than when my husband used to try to make sourdough. Each loaf would take 2 days. And then what resulted is sort of fossilized turtle. Not with Wildgrain. And you can now fully customize your Wildgrain box so you can get any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries you like. If you want a box of all bread, all pasta, or all pastries, you can have it. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/allusionist to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box. And $30 off your first box, hello, when you go to wildgrain.com/allusionist. That's wildgrain.com/allusionist. Or you can use the promo code allusionist at checkout. Thanks to Bombas for sponsoring The Allusionist and for making comfy, durable, and thoughtfully constructed socks, undies, and t-shirts. I have been waiting for months to try out my Bombas long sleeve merino t-shirts. Been too hot, but at last, layering time is nigh. And wow, these t-shirts are very light, but really help keep the heat in. And the merino wool tencel blend is really soft and not itchy at all, so if you ever had a woolly vest nightmare from childhood, these have zero resemblance to that. They're soft, there's no itches, there's no tags either, and they're quick drying if you're caught in a sudden rain shower or you have an apple bobbing accident. Go to bombas.com/allusionist and use the code allusionist for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/allusionist and use the code allusionist at checkout. bombas.com/allusionist. In January of this year, I moved to Vancouver, BC, and I'd heard about the Apple Festival at the University of British Columbia, and I was very excited to go. I set a calendar reminder to buy tickets and made sure to book early for the tasting tent, because that sells out. And when I arrive at the first entry session of the first day with my husband Martin and our friend Hannah, there's already a line to get in. Everyone's hyped to look at apples, eat some apples, and see some fun apple names. Maybe it was just me feeling hyped about that one. We receive a little apple-shaped stamp on the backs of our hands, and we are in. There are apple pies and dried apples, and apples getting crushed for juice. And there were apple saplings for sale, and £3 bags of apples of many kinds.
Topaz, refreshing, sharp, sweet, mellows with age. I mean, that's something for me to aspire to, but I feel like I'm going the other way.
I'm definitely getting sharper and more acidic with age.
I'm getting withered and bitter without having achieved true ripeness.
Sorry, could we just check in about what it means to achieve true ripeness?
Each apple varietal had a little card with background information about its provenance and also some tasting notes.
Gloucester 69. Juicier and stronger flavoured than Red Delicious.
Oh, Reubenette. I'm creating a Reubenette. It's a Reuben sandwich, but for ladies.
Finally, something for ladies to get their tiny hands around.
Winter banana.
Oh, no, that's confusing.
It's probably an apple. Brown snout.
Is this the insult table?
The brown snout is subject to splitting at crotches.
Oh, fun as it is to read the labels on the apples, we had to rush to our much-anticipated appointment at the tasting tent to eat tiny cubes of around 40 different types of apple, all grown here in British Columbia. We start with A for ambrosia.
Okay, this is an ambrosia.
Ambrosia is a chance seedling. Good size, crisp, sweet, low-acid, very juicy. Aurora, another BC apple. Belle de Boscoop, that's a sexy name. That's a more rowdy one, acidically.
Oh, I like some rowdy acidity.
Blue Pearmain.
Oh. Old New England favourite dating back to 1700s.
That's a large apple. A bit fluffy.
Yeah, I'm now on the blue pemmican, I'm afraid.
Braeburn, Bramley's Seedling, Cortland, Cox's Orange Pippin.
By the time we reach the end of the apple alphabet, I think we'll be kind of over apples.
Not yet.
Not yet. We've got to the D's. Discovery, pretty good. Ooh, Elstar, Empire, Summers, the Snow Apple. That's a beautiful name. Both of them. It's so white with this dark red flesh. It's a very dramatic apple.
The Famous is the oldest apple varietal at the festival. Its card said it has been known in Quebec since the first settlement in the 1600s. I thought has been known was weirdly passive as to how it came to be in Quebec. The only apples native to North America are crab apples, although since the Europeans planted apples here, many varietals have been begotten and cultivated. This one, the Fameuse or snow apple, did well in Canada because it can handle the cold.
Cold and delicious, boo! Ah. Oh, so pointless. People know you don't want to fill up on cold and delicious here, so we've got to go. Oh, we're coming up to Grimes Golden.
Ooh, that's exciting.
I preferred her earlier work. I'm going to guess someone called Grimes put his name on it.
I guess right. Thomas Grimes put his name on the Grimes Golden because the apple originated on his farm in 1832 in what is now West Virginia.
Golden Delicious is like the spin-off of Grimes Golden.
Oh, really? It's like the Chet Hayes of apples.
There were several eponymous apples in the tasting tent, like Canada's national apple, the Macintosh, discovered by John Macintosh on his farm in 1811. It's this apple that lent its name to Apple Macintosh computers. There were apples named after their place of origin, like the Kent, an apple born in the same English county as me. There were some portmanteau apples, like the Ida Red, a red apple developed in Idaho.
And we're over halfway through the alphabet. The apple alphabet.
Really proud of us. This one has a very fun story.
Newton Wonder. The original Newton Wonder tree was found as a seedling growing out of the thatched roof of a pub in Kingsgate in Derbyshire in the 1870s, presumably the result of a pip dropped by a bird. It's amazing, this doesn't happen more. It is very large.
I like it.
Oh, yeah. It's feisty.
Our apple tasting was, alas, incomplete. In one of the pictures, there was just an empty plate next to the apple's name card.
I'm afraid Northern Spy is not here, which its cover must have been blown.
It's there, you just can't see it, it's disguised.
Oaken pin. The apples received their curious name after a wooden pin once used as a door fastener in England in reference to the fruit's long and egg-like shape.
Oh,
thank you.
No good.
Then there was the piñata apple, created by German researchers, but its growers in Washington State gave it the name piñata, which is a registered trademark in the USA. It's a portmanteau of two of the names the varietal goes by in Europe, Pinava and Sonata. So if you were hoping that when you hit the apple with a stick, sweets will fall out, no luck there. After that, there was the Prima, a partial acronym or apple-nym. This cultivar, introduced in 1970, is the first of a series of disease-resistant apples to be released from a cooperative breeding program by research stations at the Purdue, Rutgers, and Illinois universities, hence the prefix PRI. Its complex parentage provides genetic resistance to scab. What a useful family inheritance.
Look at these beauties. Red Rome. It's popular because it blossoms late. I'm excited to taste a Reubenette.
Wait, no.
I think Reubenette would be a really nice pie apple.
Mm. Yeah, really good flavour.
Yeah.
And handsome.
Yeah.
No wagos in our pies.
Yeah, I have a strict rule.
I'll have another one of these just to remind myself.
Yeah, that's really good.
There were a lot of tasty apples up in this section of the alphabet. Shamrock, Spartan, Spencer, Stamen Winesap, the Topaz.
We're so close to completion. Yeah. Wolf River. Oh, these are massive. Look at them.
See, Wolf River just sounds like a horror movie in which a young mummy gets trapped in the creek.
World number one. That's a grandstanding name.
I feel like calling apple world number one is a bit like calling your child like Sanita or something.
It's a delicious times golden delicious cross. That's risky. Wow, these are huge apples. The apple bells are ringing.
Wow. It's apple world Ben.
Is it the checkout sign bell, like at a pub?
Yeah.
We had tasted all the alphabeticised apples from Ambrosia to Yataka.
Okay, I hate apples a bit less after this festival.
Oh, that's progress, Martin.
Our apple festival was complete.
I'd say it's the best apple festival I've been to.
It's the best and only apple festival I've been to.
Love watching this apple bashed to a pulp.
And Martin enjoyed the anti-apple violence.
Martin loved seeing apples getting pounded.
Yeah. Sounds like a Chuck Tingle book.
I mean, pounded in the apples.
A big wooden spatula. I was furious about the number of apples named after the fruit. It's not enough that apples dominate every other fruit in the pantheon.
Oh, where are we going?
There's one called bananas and apricots. Like, just if you're an apple, earn your privilege.
What is this?
Well, apple used to be the word for any fruit, Martin, so... They got an identity crisis.
Oh,
yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Hence, there's a lot of argument about what Adam and Eve ate fruit-wise.
Oh.
Some say quince, but you try eating a quince off a tree.
Well, I don't think it was delicious. The fruit of knowledge.
Hard to say. That's the propaganda, isn't it? That doesn't want people to have knowledge.
That's true.
I liked the part where we tasted a bunch of apples.
I like that part too, even though I don't like apples. But I found a couple of varieties I did like.
Yeah.
The snow apple, the famous apple.
Yeah, Fameuse.
Yeah, great. Like, I had like notes of almond. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But
you said that about every apple you liked.
No, I didn't.
Notes just of almond? That's the only tasting note you know.
notes of apple, notes of almond.
Yeah. It's all the cyanide I feed him.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Even a bad taste in the mouth.
Everything tastes a little bit like almond and also dying. it was pretty fun to just...
Taste a load of apples in alphabetical order.
Taste a load of apples in alphabetical order.
I like to eat more foods in alphabetical order.
Oh,
something to take note of.
We do all our meals that way.
The Illusionist is sponsored by Ravensburger, purveyors of jigsaw puzzles. The way that I feel when I'm making creative work, such as this podcast, is like I'm trying to assemble a jigsaw puzzle without a picture on the box, and then there almost always turn out to be at least 5 pieces missing. But Ravensburger's actual jigsaw puzzles do have pictures on the box, and that makes puzzle assembly far more relaxing for me, because I can see there's a solution to the problem. Except it's not really a problem for me that someone came along and jigsawed the puzzle into pieces, because that's the point! I can even listen to a podcast while I do a jigsaw puzzle. Not this podcast, of course. What kind of escape would that be? And even if you are afflicted by your jigsaw puzzling nightmare, a missing piece, you can contact Ravensburger via their online form, and maybe they'll be able to find a spare one for you. Shop for Ravensburger jigsaw puzzles on their official websites, or wherever you get your puzzles. The Illusionist is sponsored by Squarespace, your one-stop shop for building and running your website. And I'm always pleased to hear from you about the websites you've been making with Squarespace. This month, Illusiverse stalwart Lily launched her new website, birthweaver.co.uk. She provides trauma-informed and gender-affirming birth and postnatal support in Scotland. And Lily's skills are manifold. She is also wonderful at handicrafts. So her website has a shop, offering beautiful, bespoke handmade notebooks and vampire teabags pouches. What are vampire teabags, you ask? Go look at birthweaver.co.uk/shop. You'll get it. Lily will be adding more handmade products soon too. She told me, I find updating it and adding new products easy on the app, and when something isn't immediately obvious, Squarespace's help pages are really useful. Can confirm from years of experience, but find out for yourself. Go to squarespace.com/illusionist for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code illusionist to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/illusionist, offer code illusionist. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is Henning, noun, a compound expression in Old English and Old Norse poetry with metaphorical meaning. For example, oarsteed, meaning ship. Try using Kenning in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, on the unceded ancestral and traditional territory of the Musqueam, Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. The Sporkful is hosted by Dan Pashman, and you can hear the partner episode to this one, about the Cosmic Crisp, at thesporkful.com and the various pod places. You also heard from Kate Evans, Catherine Grandy and Joanna Crosby. Thanks to my Applefest companions Hannah McGregor from the podcast Material Girls and Martin Austwick, who also makes the Illusionist music. If you get the chance to go to the UBC Apple Festival in years to come, I recommend it. Just remember to get your tickets early. And if the sound of apples being eaten in this episode was a bit horrible for you, next episode is going to help with that. Our ad partner is Multitude. If you have a product or thing about which you'd like me to talk, sponsor the show. Contact Multitude at multitude.productions/ads. Seek out Allusionist Show on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky and the Phantom of Twitter. And you can hear or read every episode. Find links to more information about the topics and people therein. Donate to the show and become a member of the Allusiverse. And see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words. All at the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.